Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Time. Space. Podcasts.
Yes. What antiques are we talking about this week?
I want to talk about Satsuma Moriage ware.
I know nothing of this. Please tell me.
Very often in my career, I have been forced to say things like, oh, I don't really know that stuff in regards specifically to Japanese, Korean, and Chinese antiques. And I like to think of this as my first step into defogging the cloud that folds around me in this particular area of antiquary.
Right on.
So, there are two parts to Satsuma Moriage ware. I'm also confused alongside many other enthusiasts as to why these two words are constantly married together when they are ostensibly two different things, although they are intertwined in many ways. So let's start with Satsuma.
What is Satsuma?
Like a lot of potteries, it's sort of a collective name given to pottery from the Satsuma district in the Kagoshima prefecture in the Kyushu region of Japan.
Oh.
Interestingly enough, the original Satsuma pottery was not Japanese in its entirety.
No.
As is so often the case when researching, I found a reference to a burgeoning population of Korean immigrants, and then later, the details of a failed incursion into Korea in the 1600s, at which point they took many of the porcelain and ceramic artisans hostage and transported them to Satsuma.
Oh, that's no good.
So, as you may have figured from that sentence, our story kind of starts around the 1600s after the Korean pottery artisans were forced to do pottery in Japan.
Oh.
It's just one of those things where a lot of articles are, like, very euphemistic about this part.
Which I think does a disservice to history.
A little bit.
So they've kidnapped all the potters, and now they are making this?
Yes. Originally, it was a dark plain pottery, an earthenware pottery, is often referred to as Kosatsuma, or can also be heavily decorated ivory-colored pieces that have either an enamel overglaze, moriage decoration, or both. Again, since this is a collective term meant to represent a regional style of pottery, it can be pretty broad, especially when you're spanning from the 1600s to 1940. Mostly what we're going to talk about is going to be the ivory-colored later pieces. It began as an export product from the Meiji period, particularly for American and European markets after they realized that this could be incredibly good for business. This was, of course, shortly after Japan opened for export business, as very famously, they refused to do that for a very long time.
And then Portugal.
And then a Portugal. So they took the original Nishikide, which is a sort of like a brocade pattern that was frequently painted onto Satsuma ware, and using a lot of European influence, came up with a variety of... I am going to directly reference a paragraph from Wikipedia because, quite frankly, I think it's incredibly funny.
Go for it.
The resulting export style demonstrated an aesthetic thought to reflect foreign tastes. Items were covered with the mifu-like flower-packed, in Japanese hanazume, pattern or filled-in painting, in Japanese noritsubushi, to the point of horror vacui.
Ah.
Love when Wikipedia has a judgment call that nobody removes because it is very illustrative of the point.
Oh no.
Gradually, the designs would develop to kind of reflect Western interest in Eastern designs and symbols. This is where you start getting pagodas, fans, women in kimonos, interestingly painted birds. Satsuma ware was really, really popular. A lot of people consider it synonymous with Japanese ceramics as a concept.
Really?
If someone prompts you to think about Japanese pottery, what's going to come to mind will probably be an image of something that speaks to the Satsuma pottery style. This had the blowback that I think we're all familiar with when it comes to the history of things that are very popular, where it became more and more and more and more popular until everyone started hating it.
Did it become the pumpkin spice latte of ceramics?
It did. It got very pumpkin spice latte vibes. So from the 1890s, you see a pretty gradual decline in its popularity, and you see a gradual decline in its quality as the amount of it being produced starts to uptick, culminating in, frankly, an embarrassing amount in the 1940s.
Ah.
So that's a rough and ready description of what Satsuma ware is, my now favorite horror vacui design. Now, it gets married with the concept of Moriage. Moriage is a technique, not a kind of pottery. Roughly translates to a piling up in Japanese, which does refer to the technique, which is taking a wet, thick earthenware slip, clay slip, let's be simple about it. If you're just tuning in for the first time, slip is a compound that's basically just clay and water until it's incredibly mushy and soft.
And it is used to adhere clay to other clay in a process called slipping and scoring, where you score tiny ridges and textures into the clay, then slap some slip on it and put the other scored piece you want to adhere to it on there and pray it doesn't blow up in the kiln.
I was never very good at that last part.
The worst was when other people in your pottery class had decided to create pieces with deliberate large air bubbles embedded in the clay because exploding the art was part of their process, and then not telling any of the other students when they put it in the kiln with their projects.
Not that you're bitter.
Not that we're bitter.
Dude, I mean, there's a lot of that went like harder than just bubbles. There was that one guy that packed soda into his sculpture so that they would explode ferociously.
Oh, Jesus.
They were so big, though, that they were really never in with anyone else's projects. They were always in that one, like, walk-in kiln.
Well, that's good.
It was a nightmare to listen to when you were napping in the supply closet, though.
Yeah, not terribly restful, that.
So, yeah, as Candace helpfully pointed out, the slip kind of acts like a glue. And so one fun thing you can do with slip is before, after, and in between, like, surface firings of a piece, you can actually make the slip into a frosting-like consistency and apply it to the piece, not unlike frosting.
Like a buttercream or a fondant?
Like a buttercream. A fondant is not a frosting, and I'll go to my grave arguing that. Fondant is a candy. A fondant is a unwelcome substance.
Tell us how you really feel.
Ever since I discovered crusting buttercream, my tolerance for fondant has plummeted.
Meanwhile, I'm over here on Camp Marzipan having a ball.
Yeah, marzipan rules because it's actually like a delicious candy. But it's like 5 times more expensive than fondant, so like it's not happening.
Oh.
What was I talking about?
You were describing slip as...
Wait. Right, cake frosting.
The Japanese are using slip as frosting on their ceramics.
Yes. So they would take this slip mixture and apply it to the surface to make raised designs, sometimes in lines. Sometimes they would draw lines and then brush the slip down so that there was a kind of like gradual 3D effect. And sometimes it was like pointillism, like dots, making images up.
Oh, like a dot matrix printer.
Yes, very much like, but a raised image on a piece of stoneware. Originally, this actually comes from the very, very earliest origin of actually the Swissetsumaware, which is probably how they ended up getting married together, was actually gold. Like, very painstakingly built up layers of liquid gold gilding.
Oh.
Using the slip was an alternative to make it faster, cheaper, and easier to do when these pieces of pottery stopped being pretty much strictly for the ruling class.
I see.
So, like, a lot of things, they started out as an incredibly ornate show-off piece and gradually made their way down to the common man.
Trickle-down economics.
The applied slip is either, like, applied over so that the color that it is applied in is the design it is. Sometimes it is painted gold to, you know, mimic the original method of layering gold gilding. This has led to, God, just a lot of arguing about what Moriage actually means. This is one of those really fun ones where you start looking into it and you find, like, a lot of warring factions on Minutia.
Yeah?
Some people believe that if it is not unadorned clay slip, it no longer is Moriage. Some people believe Moriage is still Moriage if it is clay slip that is painted with enamel. And most others also believe that Moriage is not Moriage if the 3D effect is made entirely with enamels.
Oh.
Horrible infighting as to what, like, in a hard line definition, Moriage means.
I see.
I go with the easiest method, which is when people see the raised designs, they say, ah, Moriage, and thus I say, it is a raised design on the piece. I guess I will draw the line at tulip puffy paints. I guess that would not actually be Moriage, but my point stands.
Oh, man.
Especially since all of this, like, infighting doesn't accomplish any sort of education. It just makes everyone really mad at each other. And low-key kind of feels like one of those things where, you know, if you define Moriage, you're the one who has the authentic Moriage.
That makes things very convenient.
Yeah, doesn't it? One of the fun things about Moriage, I say fun, and I'm about to also say the word World War One. So
ah,
the entire period where anything Moriage was being made during World War One was actually called American Moriage because it was being made very specifically for the American market because America wasn't buying a lot of European pottery right then.
Yeah, no, and Europe wasn't buying a lot of anyone's pottery right then.
So if you're, they weren't doing much.
They were busy.
They were busy.
They were busy.
Frankly, they were doing other shit. And it's interesting because if you are, like, a hardcore Satsuma Moriage, like, collector, enthusiast, someone who's interested in Japanese ceramics in general, it is actually its own little, like, contained phenomena within it, which I think is neat.
Oh.
Like I said, Moriage is just a technique, which means it can apply to a lot of Japanese ceramics. I will actually go ahead, this is an opinion, I'm going to draw the line and say Moriage is a Japanese technique and does not apply to that already. There are similar methodologies that have been used for a very long time, but I think the common association is with these specifically Japanese designs.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
This is where I'm getting into it, and I'm already encountering that, like, there's a lot of ambiguity in this whole section of antiques that I think makes it really scary for people to get into. But we want to help. We're going to help, Ken. We're here to help.
We're here to help.
So like I said, since it's mostly a method, it applies to a lot of stuff. Satsuma, the general idea of Nippon, which we're going to have to do its all own episode on. And my favorite, Dragonware.
Dragonware?
I want you to guess why it's called Dragonware.
Is it because of the dragons?
It's because of the dragons.
Incredible.
Yeah, Dragonware is pretty much just like a style of pottery. I believe it's almost exclusively like 1900s to 1940s, where there is a design that is a dragon made entirely with Moriage.
Beautiful.
So you have a plain painted piece of ceramic, and the decoration is all raised design and a fancy little painted dragon. I own two sets of it from when I was younger because I thought it was the coolest.
It had a dragon on it. You were correct.
Yeah, because it had a whole dragon. What I did find out is that dating the pieces is difficult, but authenticating the pieces is a lot easier than I was expecting.
Yeah?
There's a pretty big rule of thumb that if you want antique Satsuma / Moriage, you start with the first rule is that there shouldn't be any English on it.
Ah.
At best, if there is a stamp or a marking on it in English, it is from the 1940s onward. And I'm going to rest on this point a lot because I think it gets lost in the mix, and I want to solidify it for myself as well as anyone else. Satsuma is a reference to a regional style, not a brand of any sort. So they still make it, because Satsuma's still a place.
Uh-huh.
And there are still artisans who follow that traditional style, like artisans everywhere are wont to do. I would recommend being careful when you say things like reproduction. So a lot of them were not reproductions. They have just been made contemporarily.
It never went out of production because it's still there.
Yeah. But, you know, for our intents and purposes, this is an antiques podcast. So we're going to talk about, you know, if it has English on it, it's probably from the 1940s and maybe even newer than that.
Gotcha.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I think there are probably people out there who prefer that era, the interest in designs. You know, it's fine. It's fine. We're not judging. Now I sound like I'm protesting too much. The next thing you got to do is, now that you've determined that there isn't any English, you can look for some Satsuma generic markings. One of the really cool, really old, and like really valuable ones is if it has an actual Shimazu crest.
Oh.
Right about when exporting became something Japan did at all, at the time, Satsuma was ruled by the Shimazu clan. We were still dealing with feudal Japan at the time.
See.
As a result, most of the Satsuma ware that was made had the Shimazu clan's kamon, or family crest, on it, which is a red cross within a red circle. I hate to say this, it looks a lot like the Zodiac Killer signature.
Oops.
apologies to the Shimazu clan. You guys were there first, I get it. And that'll be placed above, you know, any other artist signatures or, like, shop stamps. And it just lets you know that Shimazu was large, in charge, and had, to a certain extent, direct involvement in the production of all the stuff.
I see.
It still gets stamped on it just in the interest of preserving tradition in, like, newer pieces. So what you're looking for is a hand-painted symbol.
That's the key.
Yeah. I mean, hand-painting isn't a guarantee. I think that's a pretty good hard rule, is just because something is very commonly something, you don't rest on that. But it's a really good sign if you see the Shimazu crest hand-painted and not stamped or machined.
Got it.
There will be a marking stamped, painted, or I guess, I don't know why I paused, like there's going to be another thing you could do with it. Interpretive danced onto it. It'll say Satsuma or Satsumayaki. And as I have stated again, this is not in English, although it can be either kanji or hiragana, both of those being texts used to convey the Japanese language.
One simplified, one less so.
Yeah, thank you. Hiragana is the simplified one, right?
That I don't know. It's been too long since I saw an anime.
Don't bring up anime. Oh my god, I thought I started this and I was like, one of us is going to bring up anime. I don't want to talk about anime.
It is what exposes me to the most Japanese culture. I understand it is not representative of Japanese culture as a whole, but it is the biggest entry point for most people not in Japan.
That's true. That's true. I actually actively avoided using some words that are overused in anime.
Baka?
Yeah, I don't want to sound like a baka gaijin.
Oh, no.
Another common marking is the Dai Nippon, which translates roughly into Great Japan. That was applied specifically during the Meiji period, 1868 through 1912, if you were wondering. I know I've said it like three times and forgot to give you the dates.
But now we know. And knowing is half the battle.
Nice. This is where things start getting fishy, I think, where everyone gets frustrated when it comes to dating. Pieces before 1870 aren't generally marked.
Helpful.
Well, because they were made before exporting became their main purpose.
So there's no point. If yeah. It's not leaving Japan, there's no point in marking it. This is just for us.
They had kind of like a different circulation and a different purpose. So the markings would, you know, at most be the artist signing it. And that was usually only if it was an artist someone cared about, you know, like your standard apprentice no one was going to say, like, I need you to sign this.
Oh, man.
And that's bookended nicely with the fact that reproductions are frequently not marked. The smart ones aren't. The dumb ones are marked poorly and actually can be much more easily, like, removed from the pool. It can be dicey, and that's the point where you're going to have to enter... We're going to call it, like, the gray zone, which is the point where I start telling you that sometimes the best thing you can do is to become very familiar with the pieces and develop a sense for what, like, the real, genuine articles and, like, genuinely old articles look and feel like.
I see.
Because as time goes on with Satsuma, and Moriage in general, actually, I can say that with some confidence, as time goes on, even the legitimate stuff starts lacking in quality just because its production is being done faster and faster by larger and larger entities. So that's one thing you can look at, is the quality. If it's poor quality, that doesn't mean it's not Japanese, or not even that it's not genuinely Satsuma, but generally you can actually sort of see the time slide by in the quality and application, particularly of the Moriage. What I thought was interesting is that Moriage, as time goes on and newer and newer and newer, the details become less relief, so they are less 3D.
Okay.
And they'll sit closer to the surface. Whereas the older and highest quality stuff is the most 3D.
So you can literally feel it out.
Yeah, you can literally feel it out and it's, you know, look it out. Give it the old eyeball.
Press your eyeball directly against the porcelain. If pain ensues, probably older.
Yeah, well, probably in a physical item that you've jammed into your eye. Like most newer mass-produced things, and also counterfeits, because I want to make a line between counterfeits and contemporary pieces doesn't mean counterfeits don't happen. They certainly do. Importing Satsuma and Moriage was a huge deal in the 1970s, where you see a lot of counterfeits come from.
Oh. That was always a tricky area in antiques, when the fakes become vintage in their own right.
It's hell. It's like, the fact that I'm living through it right now, like, we are all living through the slow integration of these things into being genuinely antiques. And it's maddening. Like, it's maddening. I mean, I guess that's like a really good lens into why things like everyone is arguing about what Moriage actually is comes from. the king of antiques doesn't slam the scepter down and make a judgment. It's just like a lot of people noticing trends while they try to make sense of things that are old now, which is what makes it such a fun field. Another really interesting thing about older Satsumaware, and by older I mean pre-1890s generally, is that they shouldn't ring when they're tapped. At the time, they were still using stoneware clay and not porcelain.
Oh.
So if it rings and it appears or is marked as an older piece of Satsuma, you should be suspicious of it. There are a lot of markings in Satsuma and Japanese ceramics in general. And obviously it's super intimidating if you don't know the language because they are unfamiliar to our alphabet, right? I found some really, really cool resources for identifying marks on both Satsuma and general, like, Japanese pieces.
Oh, handy.
Gothaborg, that's GOTHEBORG.com, marks/Satsuma. They have a huge repository of common markings and what they mean, as well as common artisan groups, ceramic houses, so on and so forth. And also an excellent article on Satsuma-pottery.com called How to Read Satsuma Marks. There's a program you can use to either identify a hiragana or kanji character from a list, or you can draw it and have the computer recognize it and tell you what character it is. So you can start to try to read marks if they're not already represented.
Nice.
So I thought that was really neat. I think that's a really great resource if you're just trying to figure out your piece.
Yeah.
Definitely always hairy eyeball at the term royal Satsuma. That was never a thing.
No.
Those are always fakes, reproductions, counterfeits. And that's about it, really.
Now we know.
And now we know. I think it's neat. I'm really excited to do more, like, Japanese antiques because I've already learned, like, a lot.
Which friend turned you on to this?
Marcia has a plate that doesn't, like, have any markings. And at first it was just, we were trying to figure out what Moriage meant because someone had said that's what it was.
Oh.
And we were like, oh, is that like a brand? Is that like a style? Is it a porcelain house of some sort? No, I was trying to figure it out to, you know, help.
Cool.
And then I was like, oh, I'm learning a lot. And then I was like, oh, that's really good for my podcast, which is about learning about antiques. So I could share all the stuff I learned.
Full circle.
Yeah. And like I said, I want to do like Nippon and Dragonware particularly and kind of get into what that means.
Cool.
So I hope this has been elucidating.
It has.
And maybe you learned a little bit about how pottery classes are and how much we all hated them.
How much everyone hates that one guy, because there's one in every class who thinks he's doing something really original by ruining everyone else's work. Like, pro tip to all the that guys out there, you're not the only one. You're not terribly original. Failing on purpose doesn't automatically make it art.
In fact, like, take that first idea and then turn it into something different that doesn't make everyone miserable.
Consider, won't you? Thank you.
Thank you. Sources today include CollectorsWeekly.com, Japanese Satsuma Moriage Vase, Invaluable.com, Satsuma Pottery, Gothaborg.com, they have an article on Moriage as well as their listing of markings for Satsuma, AntiqueTrader.com, English marking on Satsuma speaks of modern age. I hate when they have the long titles. RealaRepro.com, Satsuma Mark on Reproductions, and we always have to have one, Satsuma-Pottery.com, that whole website, super helpful.
Exactly what it says on the tin.
And they offer paid appraisals for Satsuma Moriage pieces.
Cool. If you would like to recommend a topic for us to cover or just say hello, you can email us at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. Email is the single most reliable way to reach us.
Yes, it is the most reliable way to reach us.
You can also post in our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, or tag us on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com.
If you liked all of these things I said, and the way I said them, and the way Ken said stuff, and how he was mad about pottery class, and how long I'm going on about this introduction just to say, you should leave a review down wherever you're listening to this podcast. Too long. Weird intro. I hate this. Stop. 5 stars.
5 stars. We too hate that guy in pottery class.
Yeah, five stars. That guy does suck. Whatever you feel, leaving us a review is super helpful. Gets our dulcet tones into other ears.
Yay!
If you would like to listen to deleted scenes, and as of October, our special Varney the Vampire bonus episodes, you can head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks.
I'm so excited to do them.
Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees and filling our hearts with love.
Especially that.
And thank you in particular for listening.
That's right, you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.